So this morning, Joy woke up, came out into the house. She doesn't know. I didn't think she was going to be in here. I thought she was going to be in kids' church, but she just snuck back in. I'm going to tell the story anyway. So this morning, she came out into the living room. She was like, "Does it smell like poop in here?" We do have three dogs, so, you know, there are some likely culprits around other than me. But it doesn't happen very often, so Joy was like, "Does it smell like poop in here?" I was like, "I don't smell it. I don't think so." And she said, "It smells," I was like, "what's going on? Describe it for me." And she said, "It smells like my grandma's house." And I was like, "What does that mean?" She's like, "You know, kind of damp and like cat," which we don't have a cat. Anyway, the whole point of telling you that, which, you know, I kind of wish I had revisited whether or not to share that story, is to tell you that, too late, sometimes our noses take over, and they take us someplace we don't even mean to go. You know what I'm saying? So for Joy this morning, it was Grandma's house because it was damp and smelled like cat. The middle of the week, I have a coworker, we'll call her Deshauna because that is her name. She came in and said nothing, but she did smell different. And I was like, "What are you wearing today? What is?" And she's like, "I don't know." And I'm like, "How does that happen? How do you not know what you did to make you smell differently that day?" But all of a sudden, I'm in my third grade teacher's classroom, Mrs. Webb. There I am with Mrs. Webb, but it looks like Deshauna, you know. But you know what I'm talking about, right? Where you can kind of see the past. Your nose will take you someplace else, and that's because our olfactory system and our limbic system are all right there together, and involuntarily we get taken someplace else. Our imaginations are good at helping us see what happened. No. But what might happen in the future? Our noses are no good for that. Like, "I smell tomorrow is going to be like such and such an event." You know, our imaginations don't work quite the same way. So, but how does daydreaming, just bear with me here, how does daydreaming go from the past to the future? You know, like, we're good at daydreaming about the past. How do we go from something so involuntary where we can remember the past to imagining what might come here in the future, having a hope? In other words, how do we hope? That's my question. How do we hope? Enter blind Bartimaeus, a man who must have known what it was like to dream. Think about his situation. He had to have a hope that only his mind's eye could see. He was blind. There he is. He's sitting in his spot on the side of the road. What does he hear? What does he smell? I don't know, because I don't know what first century Jericho was like, but I have a feeling he heard people coming into town from another town, talking about their journey. He probably heard people working. He was near a marketplace sometimes when he was begging, because that's how he lived. So what would it be like? What would it be like to work in the market? What would it be like to be able to walk from point A to point B without needing help? He had to have known what it was like to dream, to daydream about a different future for himself. I can relate to that, and I'm pretty sure everybody in this room can relate to that. Wishing it could be different than it is. Having a hope for something miraculous, something that we might even be scared to dream. So there he is. He's sitting on his spot on the side of the road. And I'm guessing, because of what he does later, that he had heard rumors about Jesus. He had heard stories. He had heard these whispers on the wind. The one who teaches strange things. This guy who teaches strange things. But more importantly for Bartimaeus, the one who does strange things. He had to have heard, maybe, that story about the paralytic guy. The one who he couldn't move. So his friends, they went to the place where Jesus was teaching. And the house was so packed where Jesus was teaching, that they carried, they used the external staircase, they carried him up onto the roof, picked apart the shingles, which, I mean, would have been like sod and dirt and grass, picked it apart. Jesus is in the house talking. Dirt starts falling from the ceiling. The light starts opening up. I'm sure the crowd's like, anybody else notice that the roof is disappearing? And the friends are just picking away at it until finally there's a hole large enough for a grown man to drop through like a sack of potatoes right there in front of Jesus. And Jesus goes, your sins are forgiven. And the guy's like, anything else we could do here maybe? And Jesus says, okay, well, how about this? Get up, take your mat, and walk. And he did. Maybe that guy walked into Jericho, past Bartimaeus. Or maybe one of his buddies did. There had to have been stories like that that Bartimaeus heard, because if he hadn't, he wouldn't have done what he did. Are you getting me here? There was a kind of hope that had started to well up in him because he heard about this guy who was capable of something unimaginable. It's an average day. It's a normal day for Bartimaeus, a day like today. And he's taken up residence at his usual spot on this busy thoroughfare on the way out of Jericho when he hears more footsteps and more chatter than was typical. What's going on? He asks. And somebody says, Jesus. Jesus, the one who could change everything with a word, that guy is walking by me. So what does Bartimaeus do? Oh, well, that's nice. How lovely. No. Bartimaeus makes a scene. Immediately, he gets loud. He starts yelling. He stands up. Jesus, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. You know, and I'm sure he's like, somebody help me get a little bit closer here. Somebody help me edge closer. And you know what happens? The crowd says, shut up. We know you. You sit out here and you beg every day. We know him. They're not interested in Bartimaeus's dreams. They're not interested. Be quiet, they say. Does Bartimaeus get quiet? No. He yells all the more, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. So loud that he gets Jesus' attention, Jesus stops, turns to that man, and says, call him over here. And in that moment, all those people who were only interested in what Jesus could do for them, who were only interested in their nearness to Jesus, they stop. And they go, looks like we were mistaken. Bartimaeus, please, right up here to the front of the line. Come on down. We wanted you to come. We were glad that you got our attention. And they bring him right up in front of Jesus. And when that happens, Bartimaeus throws off his beggar's cloak. You know why he does that? Why do you think he did that? He's not going to need it anymore. He knew in that moment, everything from me is about to change. My hope is being realized. It is happening. Jesus says to him, what do you want me to do for you? I just wanted a hug. That's all. I just wanted to say hi. No, without skipping a beat, Bartimaeus knows exactly what he wants, and he verbalizes it. He says to Jesus, teacher, I want to regain my sight. And Jesus, without missing a beat, says, done. Have your sight. And in that moment, Bartimaeus his eyes open, and the first thing he gets to lay his eyes on, Jesus. This man that he has heard story after story after story, and suddenly, there he is, face to face with that guy. That's the first image Bartimaeus has after years of blindness. His rescuer. What was his reaction to that? His reaction was to what? In Mark it says, and immediately, Emily got me going with the tear thing. And immediately he followed him on the way. Do you know where we're at in the storyline here with Jesus' life? We are coming down the hill into Jerusalem. This is it. If Bartimaeus follows Jesus even for a couple of days, he gets to see Jerusalem overflowing with people celebrating God's Passover, this rescue from death that happened for the Egyptians. He gets to see all these people flooded into town, and he gets to watch Jesus ride into town on a colt. People throwing palm branches down in front of him, celebrating him as the son of David, which is what Bartimaeus called him. The rescuer, the Messiah. He gets to watch that. Who knows? Maybe he was a palm branch guy. Hosanna, son of David, he who comes in the name of the Lord. He knew it firsthand. He had just experienced God's power unleashed on his life, his hopes realized. If he sticks around for a couple of more days, he gets to see Jesus start doing some weird things, like going into the temple and being loud, knocking over tables, coins flying everywhere, taking a whip, chasing people out of there. Get out of here. You've made my father's house a den of robbers. That's weird. For Bartimaeus, things are going pretty good. For Jesus, things are headed in a different direction. If he hangs around for just a couple of more days, he gets to hear the ruckus of a Friday when the whole town that had just been celebrating him changes their mind. All that noise, all that jeering is now against Jesus. If he stays until Friday, if Bartimaeus sticks around for even 1 week, he gets to stand on Golgotha and with his brand new eyes watch the hope of the world die right in front of him. I cannot imagine. I shake thinking about that. What do you say if you're Bartimaeus? With your brand new eyes, looking at the one who was standing right in front of you, who gave you your brand new eyes, and there he is. He's now dying. And everybody was like, yeah, let's do that. Let's kill him. Watching the hope of the world die. There is no greater darkness and no greater despair than the death of our hope. Have you had a moment like that? Where you watched your hope die? Have you seen that happen for somebody else? If you keep your eyes open, you'll see it every day. You'll see something that will cause your hope to want to die. I have to tell you that Jesus' experience that day was different than Bartimaeus. Jesus got a painful silence from God. He died. Bartimaeus got a yes, and Jesus got silence. And that's our world, isn't it? Some people get yeses and some people don't. I remember, and I've told Sharon Dowd this story before, but one of my first vivid memories of Sharon was at a church in Waco, Texas. And we had had two different people who had different illnesses. And we were paying the same things for these people. And that Sunday was the Sunday right after one of them, a beloved professor of mine and a friend of Sharon's, Dr. Ruth Ann Foster, had died. And Sharon stood up and prayed. We prayed for, we'll call her Megan. We prayed for Megan, and you said yes. We prayed for Ruth Ann, and you said no. And you can do that because you're God. And I remember having a conversation with my friend Courtney Drew later where I was like, only Sharon Dowd can get away with saying something like that. I can't say something quite like that. That God knows what God is doing. God knows when to say yes, and God knows when to be silent. God knows when to say no. And that's a confusing thing for me, because in the world we live in, sometimes our dream and our hope for what obviously seems better, more loving, more good, it doesn't happen for us. And it doesn't happen for someone we love. It's not breaking out in the world that we, in the ways that we hope that it would. And how confusing. Why hope? Why dream then? How can we choose to hope when sometimes what we see is hopeless? Two more days. If Bartimaeus sticks around for two more days. What rumor does he hear? He is risen indeed. He gets to hear that death became life, that the end became a beginning. And this is our hope, that life, not death, is the final word. No more pain, no more tears. That is the promise that God makes. Life, not death, no more pain. No more tears. That's the hope. So what do you do with a hope deferred? I asked Joy earlier. I was like, what do you do with hope deferred? I don't know if you saw me scribbling in my notebook. If anybody was paying attention, I don't know. I was like, what do you do with hope deferred? And she goes, hope is always deferred. That is the nature of hope. It could be today. It could be tomorrow. It could be. But that's what makes what we're doing in this room different than what many other people do. They despair because they don't see a hope. They don't see a final hope. What we're talking about today is a final hope. The final word will always be good. It will always be love. It will always be life and not death, a beginning and not an end. Bartimaeus knew that. He's a good example for us. And my question for you today, I guess, is what will you dare to hope? What will you dare to hope for yourself? What will you dare to hope for this little neighborhood? For this world? What will you hope?